went to a marriage retreat on the weekend. There were 8 couples from our church that are attended. So, yeah. So 8 couples in our church now have perfectly pristine, cleaned up marriages. And if you want an example in your life for what a marriage... No. Well, the thing that we learned, it was very helpful. It was very encouraging. I heard good things from almost everyone that was there. And personally, Don and I were talking about it afterward, too. We just really appreciated what Bill had to share with us. The main point of it, if you missed it, is this. The number one need that a woman in a marriage has is to be put number one in her husband's esteem. And the number one need that a man has in a marriage relationship is to be respected. And if you can get those two things right, your marriage just starts to flow. So it was a very cool message. And the truth is, we can all use help. We can all use help in every area of our life. The question is, where will we go for help? One of the tasks the first night, he asked us to write a love poem to our spouse. It wasn't a room full of poets. There were some roses are red, violets are blue, love poems read, sugar is sweet, so are you, drop the mic and walk off. There is an epic poem about all sorts of sports that I'll just leave at that. If you were there, you'll know what I'm talking about. It was an inspiration to me. I went home and I thought, how on earth am I going to do? So I went downstairs, Donna stayed upstairs, we wrote love poems for each other that night, and I resisted the temptation to Google a love poem. And I have poetry books on my shelf too. I have a book called The World's 100 Greatest Love Poems on my shelf downstairs, so I'm not going to lie, I was tempted to just... But I did not. I resisted the temptation. I didn't go to Google for help. I didn't go to any of those places. We wrote from our hearts for each other, and it was beautiful. But the question this morning is, where do you go for help? Where do you go to find help? And you know the answer already, because you're sitting in church. Of course the answer is God. That's always the answer. You learn that in Sunday school. It doesn't matter what the question is. Jesus, okay, you win. That's always the answer to every question. But the problem is, we don't always live according to the answers that we know. So we're going to ask the question, where do you go for help? Do you go to yourself, your own resources? Do you go to people around you for help? Where do you go first for help? Do you pray? Do you pray first? Do you pray last? When does this happen? And it's going to work right into the David story, because in this week we're going to see where Saul went for help and how that played out for him. We're going to see where David went for help and what happened to him. We've been following David's journey as he's been in the wilderness running from Saul. We looked at the magnanimous sermon about do you want to be a great soul? Then last week we had some fun with hashtag prudence, which I've seen circulating on social media. So apparently prudence is becoming a thing. Yeah, hashtag prudence. You can feel free to use it anytime you want. The other thing I wanted to mention too as we're going is, I told you a while ago that our church website was hacked and I had to pull it down. There is a new one up. Yay. So, yay! It is not 100% complete, but it is fully functional. When I sound like the Death Star, it is fully operational. It is fully functional right now. It doesn't have all the content on it we want. We're going to be building in the weeks to come. But if you want to listen to sermons that you missed, there's a sermon tab at the top. There's also the most current sermons just on the side in a little sidebar. You can click them, listen to them. If you're a volunteer here, you want to know if you're on next week in the schedule, the schedules are all there under the volunteer tab, so you can get everything you need there. So yes, it's back up and running. So that's good. Oh, and regarding hashtag prudence, you'll be happy to know that I brought a pocket full of guitar picks to the marriage retreat. And I didn't lose one. When you have a pocket full, you only need one. But if you only bring one, you need a pocket full. So that's the way guitar picks work. We're going to cover a fair bit of text this morning, but I'm not going to read it all. I encourage you, if you are interested in the David story, to take some time throughout the week and read it. We're going to cover from 1 Samuel 26 right to chapter 31, the end of it. We're not going to get into every detail of it. That's for you and your own devotional time. We're going to focus on who David and Saul went to for help. But we'll start with this. I lift my eyes up. Where you go to find help matters. When
Donna and I were selling our house in Petrolia, there were a lot of those nagging things that we had put off and put off and put off and not repaired that we had to fix before we sold our house. We had the eaves trough that was hanging down a bit on the front. We had the fence at the back of the property that was leaning a little bit, and I wasn't sure how to fix it. We had the flashing all around the garage door that was catching sometime in the garage door and ripping off. And there were all these things, and some of those things had been dogging us for years in that house. And I would look at it and think, oh, I should do something about that. Wonder what I should do. Wonder if that would work. And I'd think about it, and then I'd ignore it and go off and do something else. Some of you are like this too, so that's good. So I would think about it. Sometimes you would Google it. You would think, what would Google do? Because sometimes Google can help you. I've learned a lot of things through Google. So we looked at that, and they just stuck with us. And we finally came to the point where we had to sell our house, and I had to do something about it, and I wasn't sure what to do. When we have a friend named Matt Robinson. He asked if he could help us for a little bit. And he's a contractor. And I said, sure, come on by the house. And I didn't even have to tell him what was wrong. He's like, oh, that, oh, that, oh, that. And in half a day, he had every job finished that I had agonized over for years. In the back of my mind, he was just like, oh, we just need this. Whoop, oh, the fence is straight now. Oh, the eaves trough is good. Oh, the flashing's replaced. It's all done. You finally get to the right person. You get the help you need. This seems to be a pattern in my life. Just a couple years ago, my Ford Escape was starting to sound louder than it should. And louder, and louder, and louder. And it ended up sounding like a dirt bike after a little while. And I thought, okay, I know enough about cars to know it's something to do with the muffler or the exhaust system. It sounds smart like that. So I went out, and I asked Google, what do I do with my muffler? And I learned that you can repair small cracks and small holes on a muffler with this putty stuff that you buy at Canadian Tire that apparently... So I bought the stuff. I got under the car. The hole was more like a gaping wound. But I thought, if this putty is all it says it should be, so I smeared it on. I used the whole container on there to connect the resonator back to the pipe. And I wait. I let it sit overnight. I got up in the morning. I started the car, and it went, bam, 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 just like that. It was like it was. When you were a kid, did you ever do spitballs? It was like the muffler going, okay, back at it. So we were going on vacation. I think we were going to Barrie. Don and I were trying to figure out what it was we were doing. And it was a holiday weekend. And so we tried to find a garage that would take us, but no one was working because it was a holiday. And I looked around. I didn't know what to do, and I was stressing. And finally, I called Dave Butler, who's riding trials in Scotland right now, by the way, which he's going to be away for a few weeks. But I called Dave and said, Dave, what do you think? He's like, well, just bring it over. So I went to his house, he looked at it, ran to Canadian Tire, got a piece of pipe, cut the piece of pipe, welded it together on an angle, welded it in under the car, put it all together, and whoop, no noise. It took him like 2 hours to do what I had stressed about it probably was getting louder for a few months before I finally did something about it. But that's the way it is, right? If you find the right person that knows how to do something, they'll just do it. And as Christians, we have the creator of the universe who hears our prayers. And he knows what's right. And he knows how to handle situations better than we do. We still go to him and tell him what we want him to do. But he knows better than we do. Yet we don't always go there first for help. We try to figure out things on our own. We try to think, well, how should I get my way out of this situation? There's got to be something I can do. And then when you're at the end of your own rope, then you call your friends and, oh, listen, what should I do? This is happening in my life. What do I do? And then you get advice from friends, and then it gets worse. And then finally, when every possibility is exhausted, we say, all right, God, your turn. What do you think? What I want to encourage you this morning is that third thing, do it first. I'm not saying don't try to figure things out in life, because that's what we do as humans. I'm not saying don't rely on friends, because that's why God's given us friends. But I'm saying go to God first. Seek him first with the issues in your life. The psalm that we sang a song about today, I lift my eyes up to the mountains. From where does my help come from? From where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. This is one of the Psalms of Ascents. It's a section, there's a few psalms in that part of the psalm book. And they were songs that were sung by the Israelites when they would make their pilgrimage to Jerusalem for feast time. So you'd have this great big feast multiple times throughout the year in Jerusalem, and the pilgrims from all the villages all far off would start walking towards Jerusalem, and they would meet their friends in towns, and they would get together, and it would be like family reunion, celebration, party time, and they would recite these songs as they would return to Jerusalem. And they don't call Jerusalem Mount Zion for no reason, right? It's on a mount. It's on a hill. It's up high. So as you'd be approaching Jerusalem, just imagine a pilgrim approaching Jerusalem, where the temple to their God is, saying, I lift my eyes up to the hills. I lift my eyes up to the mountains. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. Dallas Willard was the first person that made me notice this. And it stuck with me because it's profound. You look, you raise your eyes to the mountains, and the mountains are majestic. I've been to a few majestic places in my life that inspire awe. And because I'm the preacher, I'm allowed to just do this. So, if you would. That is Silver Peak in Killarney. It is an incredible, incredible high point. It doesn't look very high from there, but if you go to the next slide, that's the view from the top. Looking across the peak down, you can see the Georgian Bay. It's just amazingly beautiful. And then the next slide I have, this is Thunder House Falls. This is about a day's canoe paddle north of Highway 11. And it's where the Canadian Shield stops and the Hudson Bay subarctic lowlands begin. And the water courses through this big gorge called Thunder House Falls. It's just stunningly beautiful. And one more I have. This is the Agawa River. We took the train up, we put in, and that's called Bridal Veil Falls in the Agawa River. We climbed up the waterfall, and it was just stunning. There's so many of these beautiful things in nature, and you look at them, you look at these mountains, you look at these hills, and you think, wow, they give you pause. They make you pause and stop and think. But the point of the psalm, I lift my eyes up to the hills, I lift my eyes up to the mountains. Where does my help come from? It's not that your help comes from the mountains. It's that your help comes from the person who made the mountains. That's a big difference. Those views are majestic, but the person who made those views, can you imagine? I lift my eyes up to the mountains. Where does my help come from? Not the mountains, but the one who made the mountains. So the question I'm going to be coming back to is, where do you go first for help? Well, let's look at Saul. We'll start with a negative example. Saul had every natural advantage. He was the king. He had all of Israel at his disposal. He had armies. He had people around him. Yes, David had a little rebellion going, but let's be honest, 600 people in the wilderness running from the king and his kingdom wasn't a very big rebellion. Saul had everything going his way when the Philistines came to go to war against him again. And if you were in his shoes, what would you do when the Philistine armies pressed? You might think, okay, I can rely on my kingly experience. I've defeated the Philistines before. I'll defeat them again. I know what their weaknesses are. I'm a pretty good military leader now. This is what I'm going to do. Or you could rely on your army and your soldiers and your military experts to say, we know this about them. This is how we can do it. Maybe you would even take time to pray and say, God, what would you want me to do? How would you like me to go against the Philistines? But Saul took a different track. Here's where his help came from. The Philistines assembled and came and set up camp at Shunem. Well, Saul gathered all Israel and set up camp at Gilboa. When Saul saw the Philistine army, he was afraid and terror filled his heart. That's not what you want in a king. To look out at the enemy and think, kind of reminds me of that day decades earlier in his kingdom when he was across the valley from the Philistines and Goliath rattled his sword and this little whelp of a David came in and said, "Hey, he's nothing. I can take him. About your daughter." Remember that? But Saul was just didn't know what to do. He's paralyzed. Here he is at the end of his life, the end of his king. The same thing is happening. Terror filled his heart. He actually, and this surprised me, he inquired of the Lord. The Lord didn't answer him by dreams or by Urim or prophets. So in a vision, by the priestly stones or by the prophets who would speak. I imagine, how do you go to seek God in a dream? "God, I want to hear from you. Good night." I just wonder how you do that. But he doesn't wait. He doesn't pause. He doesn't ask why. He says to his attendants, "Go find me a woman who's a medium, someone who conjures spirits, so I can go and inquire of her." And there is one in Endor, they said. So Saul disguised himself, putting on other clothes. And at night, he and two men went to the women. "Consult a spirit for me," he said, "and bring up the one whom I name." The woman said to him, "Surely you know what Saul has done. He's cut off mediums and spiritists from the land. Why have you set a trap to bring my death?" Saul swore to her by the Lord. That's ironic. "Listen, woman, I swear by God, I will..." The whole thing was forbidden by God. Anyways. "As the Lord lives, you will not be punished for this." And then the woman said, "Well, who shall I bring up for you?" He said, "Bring up Samuel." And when the woman saw Samuel, she cried out at the top of her voice. Something tells me she was more of a trickster than a legitimate person. Because all of a sudden, Samuel shows up and she's like, "Ah! That doesn't usually happen." She cried out at the top of her voice, "Why have you deceived me? You're Saul!" The king said to her, "Don't be afraid. What do you see?" The woman said, "I see a ghostly figure coming up out of the earth." "Well, what does he look like?" Saul asked. "He's wearing a robe, and he's old." Saul knew that it was Samuel. He bowed down and prostrated himself with his face to the ground, and Samuel says to Saul, I love this, "Why have you disturbed me by bringing me up?" "I'm in great distress," Saul said. "The Philistines are fighting against me, and God has departed from me, and he no longer answers me by dreams or prophets. I've called on you so you could tell me what to do. I never listened to you when you were alive, but now that you're dead, I figure I'll give it a shot." Samuel said, "Why do you consult me now that the Lord's departed from you and become your enemy? The Lord's done what he's predicted through me. The Lord's torn the kingdom out of your hands and given it to one of your neighbors, David, because you did not obey the Lord or carry out his fierce wrath on the Amalekites. The Lord has done this to you this day. The Lord will deliver Israel and you into the hands of the Philistines tomorrow." Tomorrow. This is what you don't want a ghost to tell you. Not that you're ever consulting ghosts. This is bad news. "Tomorrow, you and your sons will be with me. The Lord will also give the army of Israel into the hands of the Philistines."
Do you remember how Saul lost his kingdom in the first place?
The Philistines were attacking, and he went out to meet them, and he decided that he was going to wait until Saul came so they could offer sacrifices to the Lord and ask of the Lord what the Lord would have him do. But 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 days, 6 days, 7 days passed,
and Samuel didn't show up on time. And so what does Saul do? "Let's rubber stamp this war and get going. Throw some sacrifices on the altar, eat your fill, and let's go." He basically uses God as a rubber stamp to authorize his war, and he goes and fights on his own without consulting God. And what is he doing here? He started by talking to God, but he didn't wait. He asked, and then as soon as he didn't get an answer right away, he's like, "Okay, well, the last time," in his perverted logic, "the last time I didn't wait for Samuel, so I'll go find Samuel, that's it." Saul didn't receive the help that he needed. This is the end of Saul. The fighting grew fierce around him. When the archers overtook him, they wounded him critically. And Saul said to his armor bearer, "Draw your sword and run me through."
or these uncircumcised fellows will come and run me through and abuse me. But his armor bearer was terrified, wouldn't do it. So Saul took his own sword and fell on it. When the armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he too fell on his sword and died with him. So Saul and his three sons and his armor bearer and all his men died
that day. The king is dead.
The God-chosen first king of Israel, who stood head and shoulders above all of his competitors. The glorious king that the people cried out for. The one who prophesied with the prophets was now committing suicide so that he wouldn't have to face the Philistines. The enemy that dogged him from the days of Goliath had finally gotten a hold of him. Why? He didn't rely on God for his help from the start to the end. He trusted in himself. He decided to rubber stamp his own agenda. He trusted in the wrong people. Rather than waiting to see if God would answer, he immediately went off and chased down this woman in Endor. So I ask you again, who do you go to for first for help? Who do you go to first when you need help? Now, while all this is happening to Saul, something else is happening with David. David's life is changing. And so we're going to zero in a little bit on David's story because it's much more encouraging than Saul's story. Here's what's happening to David. David thought to himself, one of these days, I will be destroyed by the hand of Saul, so the best thing I can do is escape to the land of the Philistines. So then Saul gave up searching for me. Then Saul will give up searching for me anywhere in Israel, and I will slip right out of his hands. So David and 600 men with him left and went over to Achish, the son of Maok, king of Gath, Goliath's hometown. David lived in Philistine territory for a year and 4 months. David, the one whom God has anointed and chosen to leave his people, is running away because Saul constantly wants to kill him. And David thinks, where's the one place Saul won't come and find me? With the people Saul is terrified of. So he goes to Gath, and you might think, why on earth would they accept him? Well, listen, if a defecting soldier with an army, with a militia of 600 fighting men show up and say, they want to kill me back home, I'm going to work for you now, they took on David. So David is in this incredibly awkward place of having to earn his keep in Philistine country. So he goes on raids, and he attacks the enemies of the Philistines. And the people from Gath think he's attacking his own people, but really he's attacking third-party enemies to kind of weasel around so he wouldn't have to attack his own people. He's in a horribly difficult situation, and it actually ends up in this crisis moment where Achish, the leader of Gath, says, David, we're going to war. We're going to war against your own people. We're going to war against the Israelites. And I want you to be my personal bodyguard to protect me in this war. And now David's in an awkward spot, right? Because what's he going to do? What would you do if you were in David's shoes? If you stick with Gath, you end up fighting your own people. But if you refuse, then you're kicked out, you're handed over to your own people who want to kill you anyways. So he's in an impossible situation. Fortunately, the Lord intervenes through the circumstances that he's in. When the Philistines prepare for the war that killed Saul, when they're preparing for this war, the other Philistine leaders look at Achish and says, what are you doing having David as your personal bodyguard? Don't you remember the song that everyone's singing? Oh, Saul's killed his thousands, but David's killed his 10,000s. Are you crazy? He's going to turn on you when you go to battle. And they pressed on Achish. So Achish finally said, okay, finally, David, you don't have to fight with us in this one because my countrymen won't have you. So just go back home. So David goes back home, and this is what he finds. David and his men reached Ziklag, where they were staying, on the third day. Now the Amalekites had raided the Negev in Ziklag. They had attacked it and burned it and had taken captive the women and everyone else in it, young and old. They killed none of them, but carried them off and went on their way. When David and his men reached Ziklag, they found it destroyed by fire and their wives and sons and daughters taken captive. So David and his men wept aloud until they had no strength left to weep. You ever been in that position? That's devastating. Wept aloud until they had no strength left to weep. David's two wives have been captured, Ahinoam of Jezreel and Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. We looked at her last week. We considered her story. David was greatly distressed because the men were talking of stoning him. That's how bad it was.
Each one was bitter in his spirit because of his sons and daughters. And let's pause here. What would you do?
You're in David's shoes. You're fighting for the enemy. The enemy won't even have you. So they send you home. You get home. After an exhausting march, your city's on fire. And all of your loved ones have been taken captive. In David was the leader and his own people wanted to stone him. He's at his lowest of low. What would you do? Would you try to think, okay, I can figure this out. Give me a minute. Would you consult the people around you? Would you say, listen, we can do this. Let's. Would you take off in vengeance and say, we can beat them. Let's go. Come on. Let's do this. David had learned a lesson that Saul never learned. Here's what he did. David found strength in the Lord his God. David said to Abiathar the priest, bring me the ephod. Abiathar brought it to him, and David inquired of the Lord, shall I pursue this raiding party, and will I overtake them? And God spoke to him, said, pursue them, he answered. You will certainly overtake them and succeed in the rescue. In the midst of the most tense and difficult situation, surrounded by enemies, what does David do? He calls on God. It says he found strength in the Lord. It's not just that he asked God what he needed to do. Even though we do that, he found strength in the Lord when he had no strength left. When he decided to seek God, that very decision strengthened him. When we're at the end of our rope, when we're going through incredible circumstances, and we make that, I've felt this in my own heart. When you make the decision and you say, okay, I don't know how I'm going to get through this, but I am going to bring this to God now. There's a strength that comes. There's an encouragement that comes. There's life that comes to your body. And life came to David. And you can read the story of what happened. It ends well for David, in case you were wondering. But that's where we're going to leave off his story. David received a twofold rescue. He was saved from having to fight against his own people. And on the other hand, God saved him, answered him, and through God, he was able to rescue his families. So again, the question, who do you go to first for help? Who do you go to first? David immediately paused and went to the Lord. So let's have one last glance at Saul and David. Saul was surrounded by every advantage. He had everyone on his side except David and a few rebels. He had the weight of Israel. He had the strength of his troops. He had it going for him. And yet in the midst of all the positive circumstances, he gave in to fear, ran and sought help from someone who was no help, and in the end lost his life. David, on the other hand, was surrounded by every disadvantage. He's in a foreign country. He's fighting battles for a foreign king. He's put in an impossible situation. His own people want to kill him. And what does he do? He stops right there and goes to God. Doesn't mean he didn't take action. Doesn't mean he didn't go for help from other people later. But the first thing he did was he sought God for help. So here's what I want to encourage you with more than anything from this part of the David story. What are you going through? What are you going through in your life right now? I would encourage you to make the determination before you leave here. We're going to sing another worship song.
But I would like you to make the determination in your heart before you leave here that whatever it is you're going through, whatever circumstances you're faced with, before you leave here, you are going to call on God for help rather than yourself, rather than your friends. Make that determination and see the strength that the Lord will give you. Who do you go to first for help? Invite the musicians to come back up. And I've changed my mind from what I told you earlier. We're going to sing Our God Saves. And then we're going to pray, and I'm going to pray Psalm 121 over us all. And we'll go our way with the peace and the strength of God. But if you would, with whatever it is in your mind that you're facing, with whatever circumstances you have in your life, let's sing a song about our God who saves.